on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm pleased to be here with you on this Tuesday, August 27th, 2024, the last Tuesday of the month of August. And as we come and meet here every day, we have one goal, and that goal is to help make you a better and more informed investor. And honestly, in my opinion, I think that that is more important than it has ever been. Most of us in our day-to-day lives are inundated with information. Information is easily accessible. You can go on the internet. It's sent to you whether you like it or not. And because of that, frequently, it's difficult to discern between signals and noise. And that's not just for the average investor. That's for everybody. And so hopefully, each day that you come over here to Invest Talk and you listen to what we have to say and you give your finance and investment questions, and really what that means is hearing the thought processes of other investors like yourselves, I hope that you leave at least a little bit more informed, at least a little bit more educated, at least a little bit more able to reach your financial goals. Now, with that being said, we'll run down today's market performance and talk about some show topics we have for you a little bit later on. But first, let's tackle our first caller question now.
Hey guys, love your show. I just wanted to get your opinion on the ETF, ABGE, Avantis All Equity Markets. I listen to the podcast and thanks for all you do.
So ticker AVGE, the Avantis All Equity Markets ETF, is a fund of funds. And what that means is that it goes out and it buys other mutual funds. Sometimes fund of funds buy mutual funds from the same fund company. Sometimes they go out and they buy funds from different fund companies. In this case, they are buying funds from the same company. They're all Avantis funds. And it looks to me like they have a little bit of a bias towards the U.S. They have 43% in the U.S. all-cap equity ETF from Avantis, then another 14% in large caps, another 3.5% in small caps. And the rest is tilted towards international stocks, about 10.42% in the Avantis International Equity ETF, and another 6% in the emerging markets ETF. So this is a fund of fund that is attacking all markets across the world, and they're doing so by purchasing other Avantis ETFs. Now, with fund of funds generally, one thing you have to be concerned about is layering of fees. So if you're purchasing other funds, you pay the underlying fund fees, and then you pay the fees of the fund of fund itself. Now, the net expense ratio here, it looks like, is 23 basis points, pretty low. All in all of Avantis' funds have very low management fees, so I don't think the fee level is a big concern there. If you've heard me talk about them before, they were founded by a couple of people that I used to work with over at Dimensional, so they're very well-run funds. They tend to focus on those areas of the market that historically have done well, higher profitable stocks, more value-oriented stocks, the types of things that we like. And so in terms of ETFs, I like this ETF. If you're going to go for fund to fund, I see no problem with this fund to fund here. It's a little bit young, born September 29th, 2022, and the performance over the 1 year is kind of dragged relative to the overall index, but certainly there's not a long enough time frame to assess how good they've been at attacking this asset class. But overall, typical fund to fund here, allocating towards some underlying funds that get some pretty broad exposure across the world. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point today concerns this topic, how the 2024 presidential election could affect your financial health. As you all know, the upcoming presidential election may significantly influence personal finances and investment strategies, particularly in areas such as taxes, healthcare, retirement savings, those areas that tend to be more open to legislative or regulatory change. Now, proposed policy changes could affect tax rates, insurance costs, retirement account regulations, leading to potential shifts in financial planning. It's important for individuals to consider these factors and maintain a diversified portfolio while focusing on long-term investment goals, as markets typically perform positively over time, regardless of political outcomes. We'll also touch on some interesting news in the sports world, crossing into the finance world, and that is the NFL approving private equity ownership in NFL franchises. What does that mean for the NFL? What does that mean for private equity? What does it mean for us, right? This is another alternative asset class that down the road, maybe we as average investors get access to. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll also touch on Libya and their supply of oil, how that's affected oil markets, how it might affect oil markets going forward. We touched on it a little bit yesterday, but we'll go more in depth there. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll also talk about Exxon's forecasts with respect to oil and how they've been, I would say, diverging from other forecasts, including the International Energy Agency. We also have some voicemail questions ready to play, including one on ENLAY, E-N-L-A-Y, which is the NLSPA ADR, and Micron Technology, Inc., MU. We also have some questions that came in from the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, we welcome your finance and investment questions now or anytime throughout the show. Now we're going to do a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. Please remember that you can call anytime and leave your questions on the Invest Talk Voice Bank, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk callers make each podcast unique.
I was calling about Intel, if it's worth holding on to, or should I sell it?
Their questions are curious.
I have saved up around $80,000, and I was wondering what I should do to make it grow.
Careful.
Oh, I'm just wondering, is this a value trap? Because it looks like it's gone down quite a bit.
Concerned.
It's taken quite the tumble today. I've been trying to get out of this position for a while. I think I waited too long.
And clever.
Looking at Dominion Energy, Inc. It does seem to be situated in some areas of expanding population.
And Justin Klein and now Luke Guerrero are always ready with their unbiased answers.
And this is, it looks like a classic example of chasing yield. Don't chase the yield.
Next 12 months price to earnings is around 30. I just don't see it at this price.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. It's official. We've now crossed over the 59 million download mark. InvestTalk. Call anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks were mostly higher. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ finished, I would say, modestly higher, just off best levels after reversing some early morning weakness. The equal weight S&P, the RSP, edged out a fresh record close as well. Small caps trailing for the second straight session. The Dow up 2 basis points. S&P 500 up 16 basis points. NASDAQ also up 16 basis points. Russell 2000 down 67 basis points. Outperformers included semis, food, software names, insurers. Relative underperformers, energy, biotech, building products, home builders, treasuries. Pretty mixed, though. The front end saw some modest gains after a well-received $69 billion two-year treasury auction. The dollar index down 30 basis points. Gold finishing down 10 basis points after its recent run-up. Crude oil ended down 2.4% after rallying 3.5% on Monday. You know, overall, it was, I'd say, another quiet session, really devoid of catalysts ahead of NVIDIA's U.S. earnings on Wednesday after the close. The next key macro events include PCE inflation on Friday, non-farm payrolls the following Friday, CPI on the 11th of September, and of course, FOMC on the 18th of September. August consumer confidence came in ahead of consensus with both present situation and expectation indices improving. However, the labor market differential narrowed a bit. Fewer respondents characterized jobs as plentiful. You know, I would say that given all of this, the path of least resistance still remains higher on the soft landing narrative traction, and as well as 200 basis points in expected Fed rate cuts over the next 18 months, and better than expected earnings growth, as well as overall cleaner systematic positioning from bigger funds. But there's still some near-term headwinds, particularly negative September seasonality, U.S. election uncertainty, and increasing tensions from a geopolitical perspective. Now let's shift gears and dip into our InvestTalk YouTube channel question bank. We love it when you go over there and check us out in video form. And when you leave a question in the comments, we try and get to those as quickly as we can. This one about ticker CHE. And the question is, I'm curious about your thoughts on Chemed, ticker CHE. I was looking into the healthcare sector, and this company has some of the best profitability metrics I've seen in the industry. It doesn't seem to be too expensive based on forward PE ratios, growth rate, and price to book ratio relative to its 5-year average. Management handles the company's debt well, and it generates strong cash flows. I'm planning to add this company to my watch list. I hope you agree. Let's take a look at CHE. Chemed engages in healthcare and maintenance services. It has two main segments, its Vitas and its Roto-Rooter segment. Vitas is it's a hospice provider, palliative care provider. Roto-Rooter includes plumbing, drain cleaning, water restoration, and other related services to residential and commercial customers. Now, year to date, it's down about 3%. Its sales growth over the past 5 years, only an annualized 5%. Nothing too exciting there. Its net margins have been stable, though they've fallen off their 2020 levels. It was about 15% in terms of net margin, projected to be 13.3% this year. They have no debt virtually, $155 million in debt at the end of last year. That's $146 million as of the most recent quarter. And they pay a pretty small dividend, 35 basis points, which is pretty consistent over the past 5 years. Their dividends per share has been growing every year from $1.16 back in December 2018, projected to be $1.64 this year. But the thing that's kind of striking to me is with all of this, their cash flow is pretty stable and not in a good way. We like to see growth, especially on the back of that less than stellar revenue growth. And their gross margins have been declining, so the efficiency of those revenues has gone down as well. And so I would say one of the benefits of this company, it actually is one of the largest providers of hospice services. But even with that being said, I think they have a growth issue. They have a future revenue and growth issue, especially in the past 3 years. They went from $2.1 billion in 2022, only projected to be $2.4 billion 2 years later. So it's fine. It's not overly expensive. I mean, it is pretty expensive, actually. It's trading at 23 times forward-looking earnings and 29 times cash flow. So I take that statement back because I was looking at the wrong number. And so when I see a number like that, when I see a relatively expensive multiple relative to the rest of its industry, yes, they do have a dominant position within one of their segments. Let's actually see. And that makes up 58% of their revenue. If it was a larger percent of their revenue, if that they were getting some good growth out of that area, I would probably think differently. But it's a little bit expensive, especially considering the fact that really growth has dried up over the past couple of years, and it looks like their operating efficiency has gone down a little bit. Now they don't have any debt, which is good, but overall, if you're going to pay a little bit more, you should be seeing some growth kind of guy, and I just don't see that here. Thanks for the call. Actually, that was a comment, so thanks for watching. Let's keep it moving and pivot back to the InvestTalk voice bank. You know the number, 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Justin and Luke. This is Frank from LA. I have a question about utility stocks. I was taking a look at a bunch of names in the energy sector in the U.S., such as Enbridge, ONEOK. They're all companies that I would like to own at some point, but I think they're currently a bit overvalued at I took a look at Europe, and I found an interesting company called Enel, E-N-E-L. I think it trades over the counter with ticker symbol E-N-L-A-Y. They are in the process of dismissing non-strategic assets in South America and other regions in Europe to reduce debt. The debt is still high, but I think it is manageable given their large cash generation. They are geographically diversified, have a good exposure to renewable energies. They pay a good dividend. And finally, they trade at a PE that is less than 10. I would like to hear your view on the stock. And thanks for all you guys do. And I'll be listening on the show.
So ticker ENLAY, Enel, is an electric utility generation and distribution company of natural gas. Electricity generation and distribution of natural gas company. Sorry, that was a mouthful. And the first thing I want to tackle is the caller's correct. They do have pretty good geographic diversification. About 42% of the revenue comes from Italy, 19% from Spain, 8.2% from Brazil, so not just focused on the European continent, also moving to South America as well. And so that's something that I like to see. Now, overall, I think that debt in a utility company is something that you can't get away with, right? Or rather, something that you can't get away from. It's inherent to the business. And so you do have a business that's building cash. You do have a business whose profitability has been improving, and they're in a line that is going to be incredibly necessary going forward, given the secular AI growth theme. I love the diversification. I like where your head is. I think this is a solid company. Thanks for the call. Now we're moving into a break. Still to come in this podcast, I will tackle more of your questions and get to our main focus point today, which is about the election. Stay with me and give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Got finance and investment questions, and Luke Guerrero is here taking your calls live. Invest Talk 888-99-CHART.
Now, I'm sure a lot of you have been inundated with coverage of the election, whether you want it or not. But it's important because it's important for not just what happens on a macro scale, but also for what happens with respect to our financial portfolios. And so navigating financial health during election years requires a steady hand and a clear strategy. And that's because it's common to see market volatility increase as elections approach. Now, this phenomenon occurs as investors adjust their portfolios based on anticipated policy shifts that could affect various sectors. And that's a natural reaction to have. But it's also important to remember that much of the desired changes are speculatory. They're speculation about what might change, rather than analysis of what is changing. Too many changes that are too drastic may weigh on your portfolio performance and create tax implications, real costs. Tax implications can be very costly. And so I'm here to remind you, once again, of the benefits of a long-term focus, of being a long-term market participant. Empirical evidence suggests that markets have a strong record of positive returns over extended periods of time, despite short-term fluctuations. It rewards people that can stomach those fluctuations. Trading, after all, is a cost. No matter how you think about it, trading is a cost. It can be a negative cost, meaning it's a benefit to your portfolio, but it is inherently a cost. It generally detracts from your performance, and too much of it can be a detriment. Another important reminder, particularly this year, is that central banks do and must act independently of politics. It's critical that the Fed focuses instead on the broader economic indicators, like employment rates and inflation, to guide its interest rate decisions. Why is that? Well, politicians have short-term incentives, winning the next election. And in this country, we have elections every 2 years. Not everybody's on the ballot every 2 years, but political parties are on the ballot every 2 years. So the politician's incentive is to win the next election. Whereas we need somebody in central banks who has more of a long-term focus, because the people have a long-term focus. They should have a long-term focus. Now, given the uncertain atmosphere that elections can create, maintaining a robust emergency fund during these times is more important than ever. The fund acts as a financial buffer. It allows you to withstand periods of economic instability without compromising your financial well-being. So what is an emergency fund? Well, generally the advice is 3 to 6 months of expenses, and not everybody can afford to have 3 to 6 months of expenses separated out into an emergency fund. So do what you can, because not only do these funds help in downturns, should you get laid off, should you not be able to make your mortgage payment, but they also provide peace of mind. They prevent rash decisions in market shifts. If you have a fund that is separate and dedicated for emergencies and the market falls 10%, you are less likely to want to sell your long-term investment portfolio because you have access to other funds. And so changes in administrations understandably lead to shifts in policy that affect tax rates, regulatory environments, and economic strategies. So what you should do is not be as speculative, but reassess your financial plan post-election. You can align your strategies with the new administration's possible policies, ensuring your financial goals remain on track. While elections introduce uncertainty to markets, they certainly do, a well-thought-out financial strategy that includes staying the course on investments, keeping a robust emergency fund, and planning a financial review post-election can help navigate the period effectively. Remember, the key to financial stability during an election year is not just in reacting to the changes, but in preparing for the full range of them. Let's go to James in New York, who has a question about MJ. Thanks for waiting. Do you own it? Or are you looking to buy it?
I'm thinking of buying it. I know it's a high risk play, but at these levels, do you think it's even worth trying a small piece of the portfolio and taking a spin on something like this?
You know, this is an interesting thing to bring up in the wake of our focus point, because this area, for those of you who don't know, the Amplify Alternative Harvest ETF, ticker MJ, it's the first cannabis-focused ETF, is going to be completely predicated, I would say, upon the outcome of the election. And you have both political parties being very high touch in terms of regulation of the cannabis industry. But I certainly think that a potential, or at least from what they've said, that a potential Harris administration may be more lenient towards policies descheduling these drugs that may boost the industry. And so the reason why it's more risky now more than ever is because in this country, no matter what happens, it's no matter what anyone tells you about how certain an election outcome, it's a coin flip in this country. And so the risk here lies mostly in the regulatory and legislative uncertainty. For me, for my blood, it's a little risky. Not only that, you're also paying 78 basis points for really only holding 26 names, most of which, you know, is focused in a separate ETF. So you're layering on a fund here. And so, you know, I think generally over the next couple months, maybe it would be safe to take a step back out of those names that could have one way or another, some pretty drastic legislative and regulatory changes. Thanks for the call. Now, the next Invest Talk, Bitcoin's critical week, Fed-driven surge, and NVIDIA's influence. This week is set to be crucial to Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency market following a notable price surge influenced by the Federal Reserve's recent decisions. That's tomorrow. But for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
I wanted to pick your brain about Apple. What did you think about their earnings call? Is this a good time to add to my position?
Call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It is official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
If you've ever dreamed of a world-class sailing adventure, I have exciting news for you. Whether you're a seasoned boater or someone desiring to experience the world differently, far away from the crowds and rushed itineraries, I've got the vacation you've been wanting for possibly a long time. I'm not talking about a cruise. Instead, imagine a private yacht reserved just for you and your friends and family. In fact, it would be ideal for groups of up to 10 guests. Destinations include the Virgin Islands, the Bahamas, St. Lucia, Belize, Tahiti, Greece, Italy, Thailand, and many more. You've seen the pictures on social media, people basking on a yacht off the shores of Italy or sailing the iconic waters of Tahiti. And you ask yourself, How do they do this? Well, this magical experience can be yours with the help of The Moorings. For more than 50 years, The Moorings has set the standard for sail charters, power charters, and all-inclusive crewed yacht charters in over 20 destinations across the globe. In fact, The Moorings is the world's premier yacht charter vacation provider and is proud to have one of the newest fleets in the industry, including state-of-the-art catamarans or a classic monohull. So, when you are ready to enjoy the world in all its majesty, authentic and unscripted, prepared to see more and be immersed in the real culture and lifestyle of your vacation destination, without planned excursions and rigid tour groups, The Moorings is waiting for you. Renting your own private yacht for a week is more affordable than you think. Now that you are inspired, your journey begins at moorings.com.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about Algonquin Power and Utilities Corporation, ticker symbol AQN. This company offered me some good money to go work for them as a civil engineer, and I'm looking to max out their employee stock purchase program. You know, I'm 30 years old, so this will kind of be a long-term career hold for me. And if there's anything you could tell me about their finances, you know, I'd greatly appreciate it. I appreciate what you guys do, and I love the show and look forward to hearing what you have to say. Thank you.
So ticker AQN, Algonquin Power and Utilities Corporation, is a Canadian utilities company. And so they work with electric, natural gas, water distribution, and wastewater collection. Now, the thing about Algonquin is a couple of years ago, their price kind of fell off a cliff a little bit. And that's because their debt has become unsustainable. In the most recent quarter, their interest coverage ratio was 0.73, meaning that what they made in the quarter wasn't enough to cover the interest payments in the quarter. And that's not good. That's not good. And that's forced them to do what they should do, which is actually sell off some of their business. And so they agreed 2 days ago to sell off their renewables unit for $2.5 billion to help ease some of that debt. Should they pay down all of that debt, that would bring the $8.3 billion down to just under $6 billion. And so that would certainly be good. Now, it's a $4.2 billion market cap company that had a 4.81% dividend yield until they decided to cut it about a month ago. They announced that they were cutting their dividend. We say this all the time. Dividends are not built in stone. And so what ended up happening is, well, the stock kind of fell off a cliff a little bit 2 weeks ago when they announced that. And so this isn't a signal from a company that is doing well. They lost money in 2022. They made 3 cents in 2023, down from their peak over the past 5 years of $1.38 in 2020. Now, they may be headed in the right direction. Certainly, this restructuring plan is a sign of that. But utility companies tend to carry high debt loads, which can become unmanageable if the business becomes bloated, which it looks like this one has. And so there hasn't really been, even with the sell or the notification that they're selling part of their business 2 days ago, it didn't really make the stock move much, which leads me to believe that there are still other issues here that would make me hesitate before buying it. Now, you're saying you're going to work there, and whether or not a stock does well versus whether or not they can pay wages are two completely different things. But you're asking about whether or not you should get involved in their employee purchase plan. I would say that that depends on a couple of things. And if you do max that out, know the vesting period, because what you're doing is you're concentrating risk. Your salary is coming from the same place that you're hoping capital appreciation comes from. And so as you get the equity in the company, how long before you're allowed to sell it? What you would want to do is not hold on to the equity in that company in perpetuity, especially because utility companies tend to not perform or outperform other sectors generally over the long term. Now, they may perform better going forward because of the demand for electricity, but still, the key thing here is you don't want to concentrate your risk, your income with where you're trying to get your capital appreciation. But if there's a beneficial match, certainly I would say go for it. But understand that this company, from a financial perspective, doesn't seem to be doing well. Anytime you have to sell off $2.5 billion worth of your business is a forced sale. Not a legally forced sale, but certainly not something they wanted to do a couple of years ago. That's a bad sign. And the fact that even with that, the market didn't have a little pop at all is another bad sign. So I would say that they're probably still struggling. Their restructuring plan is moving in the right direction, but they're not quite there yet. Thanks for the call. Now, here's an interesting story that I saw today, and that's really, it's interesting to me because, you know, for those of you who don't know, I'm an Eagles fan. I'm a diehard Eagles fan, and I love football. I can't wait. Next couple of weeks, my girlfriend's not going to hear from me for months until the football season's over. But football has now intersected with the world of finance in that the NFL is set to change its ownership policy, a move that will usher in a new era of how investment opportunities manifest themselves within the league. So let's break down what this means and the implications it could have. Well, first, the NFL owners are expected to approve a new policy that will allow them to sell up to 10% of their teams to pre-approved private equity firms. So not anybody can get involved, pre-approved firms, some of the biggest ones, your Apollos, your Blackstones. There's a significant shift from the league's longstanding rule that restricted team ownership to individuals rather than corporate entities. By opening up to institutional investors, the NFL is now joining the ranks of other major sports leagues like the NBA, Major League Baseball, the English Premier League, which have already embraced such investments. The decision comes at a time when NFL team valuations have skyrocketed, making team ownership unattainable for most individuals. For instance, the Washington Commanders, certainly not a franchise that has seen a lot of success in recent years, were sold for a record $6 billion last year. And so the infusion of private capital could help manage these high valuation levels, make team ownership more accessible by bringing in groups, and possibly drive valuations even higher. The league has put forward a list of conditions for potential investors, including no governance rights of the team and a mandate to hold their stakes for a minimum of 6 years, which is significant because that's a pretty restrictive term. More restrictive than the typical private equity investments. Still, the NFL's new policy is far more conservative than other leagues. The NBA, for example, allows up to 30% of a team to be sold to institutional investors, with no single fund owning more than 20%. The NFL's cap is significantly lower at that 10%. So what could this mean for us investors? Well, it makes something that was previously unattainable, reachable. I have, over the past year or so, seen a lot of people that are marketing ownership of sports franchises through private equity, through RIA platforms that allow average investors to get involved. And that can be beneficial, right? Because when we construct portfolios, we're looking to see diversification. And getting alternative asset classes in there brings in different assets that have different correlations than equities and bonds and can benefit your portfolio, not just from a return perspective, but from an overall risk perspective. Still, it's important to keep in mind liquidity. The terms are very strict. Now, this isn't going to be open to all of us now. For most people, it's not accessible to buy it themselves, and it's still not accessible to buy it through private equity firms. But what it does is it expands the investment opportunities so that maybe in the future, a broader swath of individuals can get access to something that could be a good diversifier. Now let's grab another question. Came in to 888-99-CHART.
Hey, Luke and Justin, Bill from Philadelphia here, calling about Micron Technologies Incorporated, ticker symbol MU. It's been on a little bit of a downtrend for the past 3 weeks, a month or so, and it's been on my radar. And was interested to get your thoughts to see if this would be a good time to pick it up, or do you foresee maybe a little more of a downtrend and a better spot to start accumulating some shares? I want to get your thoughts here. I know it's a pretty strong company, and I think if it is continuing to go on a downtrend, I think it would be a really good buy. So I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thank you so much.
So Micron Technologies is a semiconductor company. And it has benefited a lot from the artificial intelligence boom. And I remember a couple weeks ago, someone called and said, what do I think of Micron? And I thought, you know, I don't really see it dipping for an extended period of time, much below 110 level, which for me means when it got lower, we actually bought more of it for our clients. And we bought it near where it bottomed, near where it bottomed out, probably closer to like, you know, 85. It's currently trading at 97 right now. But the reason why I like this name with respect to secular AI theme is because they are a provider of dynamic random access memory chips, and it's a critical component of the computer processing power needed for AI models. Now, they also have customers that are automobile customers and traditional, you know, mobile broadcast customers and all sorts of customers that the revenue base is more diverse than some of those other companies that picked up steam with the AI growth theme. Now, their sales, their revenue has actually beat. It's increased and beat every quarter in 2024. And a lot of that is driven by that insatiable demand from the AI side. And their guidance was pretty good. And I think one of the reasons why it started to fall off was a lot of names started to fall off, particularly with some discussion about the U.S.'s role in protecting Taiwan and some kinks in the supply chain here or there. And an overall just rotation from names that had done particularly well for an extended period of time and towards those more small cap value oriented names that we've seen over the past couple months. But another reason why I like this name is because from a relative valuation basis, it's pretty inexpensive. It's trading at 2.5 times its book value. It's trading at 10 times its forward-looking earnings. It's trading at 5 times its sales. And so you have a company here that has had great revenue growth. You know, it fell off a little bit from 2022 to 2023, but a lot of that was supply chain related. And it's picked back up steam from $15 billion, projected to be $25 billion this year. It's consistently beat, but it's been dragged down with the overall industry. But for me, this is a good company. It's a well-run company. Their guidance wasn't bad going forward. Their results have been solid. Their cash flow has been looking good over the past year. Their profitability has been looking good. And so for me, this is a company that has benefited from this secular growth theme without being too overpriced. So that's why we hold it for clients. And that's why we picked it up when it dropped down past 85. So I give it a thumbs up. Thanks for the call. Here's another question from our InvestTalk YouTube channel. This one about SCHD and VOO. Could you do an evaluation on SCHD? I'm thinking of dollar cost averaging for a long-term hold in combination with ticker VOO for core holdings in my portfolio. 28 years old and hoping to have these holdings pay my bills one day. Are these good tickers or should I be looking for better? Well, first let's pull up SCHD. And SCHD is the Schwab US Dividend ETF. And for those of you who do not know, VOO is the Vanguard S&P 500 ETF. And so SCHD, it's a market cap weighted fund that includes firms with a 10-year history of paying dividends. Within that universe, SCHD uses fundamental screens such as cash flow to debt ratios, ROE, dividend yield, dividend growth rates, and they build its portfolio. And so it does all this for about 6 basis points, which is very reasonable. It's 91% in large caps, 7.33% in mid caps, a little bit in small caps. You'd expect, or the weights are rather exactly where you would expect them to be. Finance, healthcare, consumer non-cyclicals, energy names, those names that pay higher dividends. And you know, one of the things that is striking to me is that it actually is underperforming its index over 1-3 years, year to date, which is the USA IMI High Dividend Yield ETF. But what your question is about is you want to find something that can pay your bills going forward. And I think something that we try and stress, and that I actually answered a question about yesterday, is that people think about dividends, I think, in an incorrect way. Dividends are not extra money that is coming to you. All you're doing is shifting potential long-term capital gains into dividend income. And so, yeah, depending on what type of account you hold this in, that can be fine. It could be worse from a tax perspective, depending on how you structure your holdings. But if you want to really be able to use your investments to pay your bills one day, that means you should be looking for things that have higher growth opportunities. And historically speaking, small caps, mid caps tend to outperform large caps. Now, that has been skewed the past couple of years because we were in a zero interest rate environment, an unprecedented zero interest rate environment that lended itself to money being thrown at a lot of companies that did not make anything. And some of them did really well, and that skewed the results. But historically, if you look over the life of data, which is going back into the 1920s, you see that small outperforms mid caps, which outperforms large caps. Value tends to outperform growth. High profitability tends to outperform low profitability. And so, given that you're 28, I would say what you should be focusing on more is tilting your portfolio towards those names that are looking for capital appreciation. The things that we know empirically tend to outperform over the long term. Dividends are great. Dividends are fine. Dividends can be a signal of a mature company that can afford to pay a dividend, but just looking at dividend yield itself doesn't really answer the question. We looked at a fund, I think yesterday, that didn't look at dividend yield itself. It looked at cash dividend growth. Because we saw in Algonquin Utilities, just because a company pays a dividend today doesn't mean it's going to pay a dividend tomorrow. Now, this fund looks like, I mentioned, it does some sort of screens, but I just hope that kind of reorients how you think about investing, because you can, instead of focusing solely on dividends, sell some long-term holdings, pay yourself income that way, pay your bills that way. So don't just put yourself in a box. Don't just think, if I need income, I got to reach towards dividends. If I want capital appreciation, I'm going to reach towards something else. Those two things can work in concert together. Thanks for the call or the comment. Now we're moving into a break, and my phone lines are open. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Luke Guerrero is here and ready to tackle your questions.
Is it a good idea to sell your losses in a Roth IRA and just use whatever you have left to reinvest into better stocks?
Just wanted to ask you about one stock that I'm looking at, Entergy ETR.
Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Now, before we head off for the day, let's tackle the last two things I wanted to talk about in concert, because they are related. And the first is that oil prices surged towards their highest in nearly 2 weeks this Monday, with Brent crude futures climbing 3% to settle at just over $81, $81.43 a barrel. The U.S. benchmark rose 3.5% to $70.42 a barrel. And so this increase followed disruptions in the Libyan oil production due to ongoing political disputes between the country's rival governments. The shutdown of Libyan production, which delivers about 1 million barrels a day, according to OPEC, comes amid a deepening conflict over the leadership of the Central Bank of Libya. The Eastern government, which is not internationally recognized, announced a halt to all oil production and exports. The action, which many see as more, you know, part of a broader struggle, particularly over the central bank's governing position. The bank, which holds substantial oil revenues, remains a critical asset in Libya's economy, currently controlled by the internationally recognized government in Tripoli. Analysts like Phil Flynn of the Price Futures Group suggested that the market had previously downplayed geopolitical risks, but the recent development signals potential changes. The escalation in Libya, combined with heightened tensions in the Middle East, particularly due to recent Israeli military actions in southern Lebanon, contributes to the rising risks that have driven oil prices higher by stoking fears of broader regional instability. And, you know, these developments kind of underscore the ongoing chaos in Libya and the region more broadly, but Libya since 2011, the uprising that toppled Muammar Gaddafi, and the repeated failures to unify the country under a single government despite numerous UN attempts. The struggle for control of the central bank and its assets is particularly significant as it not only impacts Libya's financial stability, but also poses broader implications for global oil markets. And it seems as though we're entering a sustained period of hostilities in various parts of the Middle East, something that may dampen the effects of weakened global oil demand and maybe keep prices artificially higher. And the reason why that's interesting is because that's the short term. Now, in the long term, Exxon actually just came out and projected that global oil demand will stay consistent at over 100 million barrels per day through 2050, despite the global push for energy transition to curb fossil fuels. And this forecast pretty starkly contrasts with other predictions. BP expected a decline to 75 million barrels per day. The IEA, the International Energy Agency, well, they projected that by 2050, it's going to dip down to 54.8 million if climate pledges are met. And so at a time where we have potential supply issues in the short term, Exxon is warning and emphasizing that a failure to continue to invest in oil production could lead to significant oil shocks down the road, with potential crude prices quadrupling due to dwindling supply. Now, this perspective from Exxon kind of underscores a broader debate between traditional energy companies and various stakeholders, including policymakers, climate scientists, activists, who advocated for maybe a more rapid transition to renewable energy than economies were ready for. Now, Exxon, who's certainly not unbiased towards oil demand, defended its stance by highlighting something that we talk about, the necessity of oil in developing regions to alleviate poverty. It's an essential part of industrialization. Now, despite all the controversies, Exxon still does anticipate a 25% reduction in carbon emissions by 2050, but a lot of that not coming from weaning us off of oil, but more towards increased energy efficiency, new technologies like carbon capture. Now, this reduction does fall short of the goals set by the 2015 Paris Agreement, and does highlight ongoing tensions between regulators, governments, people, stakeholders, and the oil companies themselves. And so it's important to know, because Exxon itself is planning to expand its production significantly, including projects in Texas, off the shore of Guyana. And environmentalists are criticizing these moves. But there are risks coming from all areas here. And as you see what happens to oil prices with short-term supply shocks, certainly under-anticipating supply needs going forward can lead to larger shocks down the road. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. They can get those at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Be sure, if you do go to iTunes, to rate and review us. You also can watch us, our beautiful, quote-unquote beautiful faces, use the air quotes if you're watching, on YouTube, on our Invest Talk YouTube channel. That's Invest Talk with two T's. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.